Thank you. Okay, so I'll call the meeting to order here. And then I'll look for a motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting.
I'll make that motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye, okay, thank you. So we have three resolutions before us.
You're gonna have to tell me who's making the motions and seconding them, because I can't see everyone.
Okay, that's a very good point, thank you. Yeah, so let's make a rule for the meeting that you identify yourself prior to talking, so everyone knows, especially since we have folks on the phone without video.
Okay, Lynn Archer seconded.
Tom Corcoran, motion.
Thank you very much. So we have three resolutions on there, and I was speaking with Legislator Petit and Legislator Parity today. They agreed to postpone these, resolution number 8 and number 9, till we have a little bit more face time with each other and, you know, don't have the COVID virus hanging over us, you know, and having all the resources of the county being taken up, not all the resources, but a good amount of the resources for the county being taken up with that effort. So we're going to postpone it with Laura's and John's approval for another month, if that's okay. Laura, please concur if you agree.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I would like to, you know, just really make sure that we are moving forward with this. I mean, I know that we've gotten some obstacles, but we could have had a housing committee several months ago. One of the constituents also suggested if we're going to be doing the upgrades to the IBM building, if we don't need it for COVID patients, perhaps we can use that as temporary shelter. So, you know, it is my understanding that the county executive is moving forward with doing another survey so they can make plans or some resolutions coming forward. But, I mean, sooner than later. So I agree we need more face time to have open discussions, but this is just really important to both John and I to make sure that before it turns into a real crisis, especially with the economy being as uncertain as it is.
I just want to add that the Deputy Executive Dr. Wright is with us this evening, and she can give us a little bit of a brief update on where they are with that, with the county. We'll do that later on, if that's okay.
Thank you. Okay, I'll mute now.
Okay, somebody want to make a motion to postpone those?
I'll make a motion that we postpone resolutions number 8 and number 9.
And second. This is Lynn.
Oh, this is Herb, sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Legislator Litz. Thank you, Legislator Archer. And then we're going to move on to resolution number 162, which is authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of... Sorry?
You need to vote to postpone those.
Oh, I'm sorry. All in favor? Sorry about that.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you, Fawn. Okay, so we'll go through resolution number 162 now, and I promise we will vote on this. Authorizing the chair of the county legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Transportation to accept New York State funds for Ulster and Dutchess County Public Transit, LINC, Department of Transportation, Ulster County Area Transit, UCAT.
Herb Litz, I will move the motion, 162.
Is there a second?
Tom Corcoran, I'll second it.
Is there any discussion on this resolution?
Good evening, everyone. This is Saja Ahmed, the acting director of UCAT. If you have any questions about this resolution, let me know. It's basically, this service is actually right now it's suspended. It's our service to the Metro North station in Poughkeepsie. There's a do not exceed, it's a revenue contract. So there's a do not exceed of $360,000. We're working right now with our counterparts at the Department of Transportation to figure out how, all operating revenue is going to work for the rest of the year. I will keep you guys posted. So if you have any questions, I am on the line before you vote on this.
I actually do have a little bit of a question about it, and I guess it doesn't have to do with this exact resolution, but sorry about that. I took you guys off my screen, didn't I? Sorry. It has to do with the ridership of that. How does that do? I drive to Poughkeepsie every day, and I've, you know, passed the bus multiple times, you know, and I'm wondering, what is the actual ridership on that? Is it pretty good, or?
It's doing well. It's actually remained flat over the past few years. I don't have it exactly in front of me, but it's hovering around 20,000 a year. I can give you guys the exact figures. We haven't put enough marketing into the service over the past few years. So that's actually something we were looking at before this all happened, in partnership with the state. There is if you look within the language of the contract, there is a part that allows us to spend a little bit of money on advertising. And what we found, because we're still offering rides right now to essential workers, is more so than people commuting into the city, there are a lot of people that are just using that service to get to Poughkeepsie. And we had essential workers that are working in the nursing homes, in Poughkeepsie and different areas like that. So it's doing well. We were able to increase the do not exceed on this contract and offer the service directly from Kingston to Poughkeepsie over the past few years, in addition to the commuter service from Rosendale. So it's doing well. I think we could have increased ridership if we weren't in the current situation. I don't know, honestly, what the results will be for public transportation where people are in close contact with each other. But so to answer your question, it was doing well. It could probably get some more press, and we were actually working on a whole marketing strategy to increase ridership on across the board on our service, but especially this one that we're actually able to have with all the state support. And last year, the revenue from the state was almost $300,000. Basically, this contract is for the operating shortfall that is not covered by other parts of our revenue streams.
Thank you very much for the update on that. I appreciate it. Go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
Does she think that they're going to cut the funding for that?
Yeah, I don't know that that's likely, right? I mean, there's no indication that the funding's going to be cut for that, is there?
Right now, we're working with the New York Public Transit Association. There's no cuts for this year for operating assistance, and there's a slight increase for upstate systems for that was approved in this past state budget. That could change because our funding source for, especially for upstate system, is linked to the Department of Health, and we have weekly conference calls with them. And I'm sure for next month, there'll be a group of resolutions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any more questions on that resolution? Okay, I'm gonna I guess we need a vote here. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Opposed? No? Okay. It passes. Thank you. So for old business today, let's give Dr. Wright an opportunity to speak a little bit about the progress they're making on the housing committee. I know there has been some progress made in the last month, even though we've been distracted with other things. So I'll let Dr. Wright have a few minutes here.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, so I gave this update to Legislator Cahill last week, and I wanted to share it with you as well. We are trying, as the county works through the COVID response effort, to keep progress going on some of the most crucial issues, and housing is absolutely near the top of that list. So Dennis Doyle and I have continued to work on the whole suite of tools in the toolbox that we've been looking at on housing. And so we didn't feel that it was really possible or appropriate to try to put a committee together at this point. Instead, we've been trying to work on advancing the things where we have kind of behind the scenes and building block work to do. And we're looking to get a resolution for you on a couple of them for the next cycle. So one of them is that we've been in further discussion with the city of Kingston about expanding the land bank to countywide. We think that's a really important tool for us to have, doing some research on different ways that communities around the country have been structuring joint city-county land banks. There's a few examples throughout the state. And so what we're going to ask for from you all next cycle is essentially a memorializing resolution that calls on the executive and to have a dialogue with the city of Kingston about finding an appropriate structure for that. So there's issues to work out in terms of the structure of the board, the disposition policy, staffing, funding, and so on. But we'd like to formally begin that dialogue with them. We started putting together some thoughts on what we, what those issues are, but really need to begin a dialogue with them about it. And the other is that we have started looking at county-owned properties that might be suitable for housing development, and would like to sort of get your approval to go ahead and make that investigation as well. So that's what we're looking at right now, trying to get those things lined up so that when we can really get back to the committee process, we've got more tools further along.
So how is the Mr. Doyle making out with the law, with the IDA that will allow the IDA to fund multiple housing dwelling, I guess you call it, I don't know. I know that we had discussed that a couple of different times, right?
Yeah, I am not sure whether Dennis has had that discussion with them. I can check on that.
Okay. All right. Does anyone have any questions for Dr. Wright?
Yeah, I do. Dr. Wright, can you give me an understanding of what's the difference between a land trust and a land bank?
Sure. And that's a really good point, because I think we want to also investigate setting up land trust capability. So the land bank is a mechanism to essentially clear title on properties and get them back on the market. So it's used in different ways in different communities. In many communities, it's used as a way to address vacant properties and what used to be called blight. That's not so much the issue that we're dealing with here, but it's a mechanism for getting properties back into productive use. Usually properties that have been foreclosed on, but the land bank has more powers than that. It can also purchase properties and so on. So that's what it's really about. The land trust is a mechanism for keeping properties that can be acquired in a number of ways permanently affordable. So in most models, the land trust keeps ownership of land that housing is built on, and either leases or sells the housing itself. And so the land trust is able to create policies around the permanent affordability of that housing, whereas if the land bank or anyone sold an affordable house and you didn't have a mechanism to keep it permanently affordable, the next time it got sold, you'd lose that affordable property. So many communities around the country are using land banks and land trusts together as ways to get properties that are not on the market back into the market in a way that keeps them permanently affordable. And that's something that the Kingston Land Bank has been discussing in conjunction with the Kingston Land Trust. Now, very often land trusts are community-based and community-driven organizations. They frequently have boards that consist of residents in the properties. And it may be that it's, while we have one county land bank, we may want to have many land trusts in the county. It may be something that's better done at a community level and maybe even a self-defined community level. I think that's open for consideration. And so it may be that the county may have a role perhaps in working with some community partners on the funding side of it in helping set up some capacity to help multiple land trusts kind of do their technical work so that they can focus on the community-driven aspect of their work. So that's something that we're early in exploring, but I think it could be a very powerful model for us.
Great, thank you. Any other questions for Dr. Wright? So we can expect a couple of resolutions from the executive in this committee next month in regard to this?
That's and, right. Okay. Or potentially one combined resolution with both of those things in it.
Okay, right. And then, go ahead.
Can I say, the executive and I have had a number of discussions on that. In fact, I had a discussion with you too, Evelyn, you were there. So I'm hoping that the committee is basically very similar to what the discussions that we had. And if not, you know, please keep me abreast of what it is, any changes and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. We're intending to proceed with the design that we talked about as soon as we can. And, you know, if we want to have some discussions in the meantime about potential members to reach out to and how exactly we're going to appoint those members, we could go ahead and do that so that we're ready to make those invitations just as soon as we think it's practical to do so.
Perfect.
Yeah, and if anyone on the committee has any names that they'd like to bring forward, please do so, and we'll get them, you know, in front of all of us, and we can look at them together and see how that works out. The only thing I'll add to that is in our next meeting, I think I'm going to invite Dennis Doyle and you to the meeting to just give us like a checkpoint kind of thing where we are and how things are progressing, because, you know, we really, you know, we have to be able to continue to move forward. Even though we're in this COVID crisis, we still have to do the business of the county. And this is something, as we all agree, is a high priority. And I don't want it to get lost in the sauce here. So, you know, in our May meeting, we hopefully will be able to have, you know, somewhat of a progress report and then put something a little bit more firm in motion as far as the committee and other things like that.
Great.
Thank you very much.
And, Brian?
Yes, sir.
Are you finished with that? Can we move on to the IDA?
Yes, sir. You can do that. I'll bring that up. I was going to bring, is there any other old business? And I guess the IDA would be considered old business, right?
Well, it could be considered old or new. It's up to you. It depends on your point of view. the IDA right now, we are continuing with the appointees that we have because they continue to serve due to continuity of office. And we do have to either, you know, reappoint all of them, some of them, none of them, whatever we feel that we need to do. So I would hope that all the members of this committee are looking at the IDA appointments that we have right now. And we've got to make a decision on how we're going to move forward with those appointments because we should be doing them. Normally, they would have been done probably last month or this month. You know, we usually, you know, take a month or two to get them done. But of course, you know, under the crisis, things have changed. But I would hope that we can get that done by, you know, with next month's meeting.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Dave, I was going to suggest let's get those names forward and let's try and get those appointments done for the May meeting. I think we could do that. It's a month away, right? That's plenty of time to get the folks and get the resumes who are interested and folks who you and others who want to bring forward. We got plenty of time to do that, right? If we need to call a meeting to review those, we'll do that, right? But I think that it'd be in our best interest to get that done by the May meeting.
Now, you did have an email sent out.
Yeah.
And all the existing members said that they wish to return. Is that correct?
Yep, Fawn, you're right. We sent an email out and they all agreed they want to come back.
Yes, they all asked to be reappointed.
Yeah. So we'll consider that as well, right?
Brian?
Yes.
Hi, Lynn Archer. I'm hoping we can just reinstate everyone. Given the current environment and I think it would be difficult to try to bring on new people this go around, although normally I would say, yes, we want to interview and all of that. We're a little bit behind in the process. And given the fact that, you know, we're going to have some huge challenges going forward, I think continuity of the current regime, at least for this year, hopefully helping us through some challenging months ahead, I think it's probably easier and safer to keep who we have in place. So instead of trying to interview people through Zoom, I think this would be a lot more difficult given the current environment.
Well, thank you.
Well, I see where Senator Archer is, I can understand her point, but we do have some concerns that we will need a very flexible IDA. And I'm concerned if they are going to be able to be flexible. And I think a conversation with the members needs to be very blunt and to the point that we need some flexibility. And they need to find a reason to do things rather than reasons not to do things that they seem to have been doing in the past couple years. It's all about not doing things as opposed to actually pushing to do things. Now, I certainly don't want any rules or regulations broken. But as you know, and everybody understands, just like the Constitution of the United States, there's ways of interpreting things, and there's a loose construction and a strict construction of the interpretation. And right now, we need a loose construction.
Well, and as I think I've said before, and I've said it to a number of folks, that you bring the IDA board together with you seated with the Office of Economic Development, with our standing committee. You bring all these people together. I think there's a lot of knowledge, experience, and expertise. And when you ask people to be part of a solution, you get a better result when you bring people together and work through those things. So I can't impress enough about what I think is critical, given the players here, that I think we could reap a lot of benefit of bringing them together now and start to plan about, okay, so when it opens up again, what can we do? How can we support businesses? How do we help them? You know, there's things in place today with the SBA loans, but what's going to happen when, you know, it's, you know, time to open the doors again? What help do they need? How are we prepared to help support that? I think, you know, those are some of the things that by bringing everyone together could create some ideas and generate some ideas. And people, I think, are always want to be a part of helping and be part of a solution than being an obstacle. So just food for thought.
Well, and one thing I think we can keep in mind is, I don't think you have to replace everyone. If there are, you know, people that we think might be a better fit in this environment, we should also consider that, right? We all agree that it's going to be a difficult environment going forward. And, experience does matter. And so, of course, you don't get rid of everyone, but maybe you do replace some individuals on the board, or maybe you don't, you know. I just don't think we should rule that are out. If we have candidates that come that are presented to us that are, you know, viable candidates and bring a lot to the table, then we should consider them. I mean, that's, you know, there's a reason why we appoint them every year, correct?
Or every 2 years.
I'm sorry, every 2 years, sorry. Every term, right. All right, any other comments on the IDA board at this time?
Yeah, Chairman, if I may?
Yeah.
Just to follow up on Chair Donaldson's comments, we do have to be careful. The IDA has a specific, as part of their charter, rules and requirements that they're supposed to follow. It's well within our rights to do, you know, if they try to put it through, to do a deviated pilot. But we do have to be careful. I mean, the IDA was created for industrial, for job creation, and if we ask them to be, I'm not quite sure what flexible means. I guess it depends on how you know, housing and some other issues go through. But, you know, I mean, if them, then why not us? So if we're approving something that may deviate from their, basically what they're supposed to be doing, then why not a hotel that only employs 5 or 10 people? So I think, you know, before we consider replacing people just because we need them to be more flexible, we have to take a good look at what they're expected to do. And then perhaps, you know, we have to look at it at another type of committee like we had a UCDC at one time.
Thank you very much. Any other comments at this point? Okay, so then we'll move on to new business, I guess, other new business. Is there anything anyone wants to bring up at this time? Okay, thank you. Is there any members of the public on the phone that would like to speak? I know that we have at least one dial-in number from outside the committee in the legislature.
Hi, this is Amanda Sissenstein.
I'm sorry, could you speak up again? I didn't quite hear what you said. Sorry.
It's Amanda Sissenstein. Can you hear me?
Yes. And okay, go ahead.
So I just wanted to follow up with Legislator Petit's concerns in the beginning of the meeting about what to do with people who are experiencing homelessness during this time. It is something that I know is like only kind of loosely under your committee, but I don't know if there really is a committee that specifically deals with this issue.
I think Social Services Committee would probably be more committee for this time.
Sure. But I also think it would need to be a collaboration between the two, because a lot of the direct relief that's happening right now isn't actually through ESS. And I think that it's going to have to be a community-wide partnership that helps deal with this issue. And as the legislature, Petit had suggested, potentially the old IBM building, if that is not actually indeed needed for hospital beds, could be converted into temporary housing and or treatment for people who are experiencing symptoms and are homeless. You know, there's some very, very basic things that really put everybody in the community at risk, because people who are homeless right now, we have to remember that all social amenities are pretty much shut down. So if there was a place where they were able to clean themselves, able to shower, able to wash their hands, use the bathroom, all of those places are shut down right now.
So here's what I'm going to suggest at this time. Since this is, you know, really not pertinent to this committee right now, we really don't have anything that we can do as part of this committee to help with that issue as we speak. You know, that's
I disagree.
Well, I just want to finish what I'm saying.
A partnership with the IDA, right, so, for example, where tax breaks.
So the IDA is not going to solve this COVID homeless problem at this point. I think it's an issue that maybe we should be directing to the executive's COVID team. If it's an issue that is prevalent in the community, that people are homeless and they are positive, well, that's an issue I'm guarantee you 100% that the executive would like to be aware of and be able to help with. So I would recommend that, you know, calling the COVID hotline and expressing concerns for people who are homeless and do need a place to take a shower and have potentially tested positive. You know, that to me is what the hotline is for, right? And I would suggest that we utilize
I would that. Suggest that when you extend public comment, you allow the commenter to speak and not interrupt them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we have a three-minute time limit.
I suggest a partnership.
So, you know,
I'm
just going to say this. You know, I'm the only committee chair.
Solution,
okay,
involving property tax breaks.
Point of order, this is public comment, and she could talk about Big Bird if she wants to talk about Big Bird or anything, so she should have 3 minutes.
So I can also shut down public comment as the chair of the committee, and I'm the only chair of the committee that I'm aware of that allows public comment, especially during Zoom meetings at this point right now. And it's a repetitive comment that we've heard. We've had 3 meetings, and I've heard the comments 3 times from people. So, you know, there's a place where, you know, it's appropriate, and there's a place where it's not appropriate. And I think right now we certainly understand, and I've made a recommendation as chair of the committee as what the public commenter should do, and it certainly isn't going to be resolved in this committee. And that's my opinion.
You are not allowing public comment. If you were to extend public comment and then immediately redact it, that is not allowing public comment. So okay. Obviously that you...
Oh, wait a minute. May I say something? Amanda, you made a comment. They listened to it. He responded to it. That is public comment, is it not?
No, actually, the response is inappropriate during public comment. Especially not in the middle of a person's public comment when they haven't even finished a sentence.
You are wrong. On a legislative body, it's a different game than in a legislative or in a committee. In the committee, public comment is often discussed back and forth. Totally different than the meeting of the whole, which would turn it into a nightmare if you allowed that to go back and forth. But in a committee meeting, if a public has a, you can make a comment, and if the chairman of the committee wishes to speak on that comment or ask you other questions on the comment or give an opinion on that comment, he certainly has that right to do so.
Well, even if I concede your point, still interrupting somebody before they've actually even gotten to their comment certainly does not apply to even a committee, let alone, you know, or a legislative body. I hadn't even actually gotten to the point of what I was trying to say, which suggests and encourage a partnership with the IDA to potentially give property tax breaks to entities, whether they be hotels, whether they be Airbnbs, whether they be, you know, any other kind of entity that could potentially house people who are currently houseless, could be given tax abatements to incentivize them lending their facilities to house currently houseless. I really feel falls under the purview of this committee, but I wasn't even able to get to that because I was so rudely cut off.
Well, thank you for your comments. Legislator Lewis. Legislator Lewis, go ahead.
Yes. Go ahead. I would suggest as chairman in the future, your public comment, you should have a set time limit, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it is. The public can express their concerns and opinion for those 3 minutes. We can take it under advisement. We could respond if you must, but that's all they get is 3 minutes. And then we move on to the next public comment, or we move on with the meeting.
And I can also, I would also suggest you that you could present it. Thank you very much, Legislator Litz.
Yep.
I would also suggest that if you'd like to submit it in writing, you can do that too. And we would welcome that. And would become part of the record as well. Go ahead, Legislator Archer.
Thank you. I just want to step back a second to the IDA and just for the purposes of, you know, how we're going to move forward. If we're opening it up to additional candidates, we have in the past had a process where we've interviewed everyone, including existing members who wish to stay. Which means that if we're going to do that and you wanted to do something for next month, it would have to be done quickly in advance of a resolution timeframe, or at least get done before our next meeting so we could vote on it. But it was always an open interview where everyone was looked at, and then there was a discussion around who we were putting forward. So if that is deviating or changing, I think it's important to have a conversation about it.
I don't disagree. I guess if they're existing members, would we need to interview them again if they're members and we're going to reappoint them?
Well, there was discussion that others may be considered and put forward. So my recommendation is, and this is what had been done in the past, if in fact you're opening it up to a potential other candidates, then everybody should go through the interview process, including those already sitting on the board. And that has been our practice in the past. So that is, I'm just kind of highlighting what our practice has been all along on these IDA board members.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Brian?
Yes, sir.
I certainly understand that, but if you're going to reappoint someone and it's the understanding that that person's going to be reappointed, why would you interview them? I mean, sometimes it's a I mean, I've seen that happen with the RRA, where you're bringing all these people in, interview them again after they've been on the board for so many years, or two terms or three terms, and then you're interviewing them. It's kind of insulting when you're actually spending an awful lot of time volunteering to serve on these boards, and you're looking to be reappointed, and they agree that they're going to be reappointed. I mean, if there's somebody that you feel that shouldn't be reappointed, then I guess they could be interviewed, but I don't think you need to interview every single body that everybody may agree with.
Well, I think that we have...
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Herb.
Yes, go ahead. I'm going to do this so I can see. Go ahead.
Okay. We know because of the times, things are not normal, but if we're going to entertain some additional candidates, new candidates for a position on the IDA, I think at very least we should have everyone supply a letter of their interest for either reappointment or appointment with a copy of their resume, because there's several people on this committee that have not interviewed any of the people, whether they've been there for decades or not. So at least everybody's given a fair shake. And then as a committee, we can determine on those that we want to interview and, quote, in person, virtually, people that we know that are longstanding, that everybody knows, they've done a great job. Yeah, to bring them in and you know, interview them might be a somewhat of a slap in the face, maybe. But we make that decision after we have everything that we need.
So we do have a letter from each one of them saying they do want to come back already, right, Fawn? We do. So
there's
that
several
part is
people
done.
On this committee that don't know them, at least if there was a current resume that...
No, I don't disagree with you. I think that's a good
on
idea.
The committee could avail themselves.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think,
I guess my point is, if you are going to be handpicking who you want to stay on and who you don't, not having everyone have the opportunity of stating their case, I think, is a disadvantage. And you're predetermining who you're already moving out. If you have ideas of who you want to move out, I think the best way to do this is to interview everyone and look at these individuals against any potential new ones and have a meaningful conversation. But if you're already decided who you don't want and you're going through this and you're just going to remove them and consider someone else, then I think that we have now taken the process and created something very different from what we have in the past.
May I comment?
Go ahead, Dave. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Herb hit the nail on the head. I think we need to get the resumes from everybody that either wants to serve or is serving and wants to come back. I think we have some of the resumes on file already. Maybe what we can do, what we could do is actually request, either updated resumes, or they could just, you know, if they don't have an updated one, we can operate on the one they had if they don't wish to give us a new one or what have you. And if there's other people that are looking to serve, we get a resume from them, and then we can take a look at them, and then we can make a decision through those resumes that, like Herb pointed out, on who we would. There's some people maybe you don't need to interview, and there's others that you may. I mean, we may have some people maybe up in the air and say, well, yeah, we want that person. There may be some differences there. But I mean, if there is a pretty strong stance for some, you know, people to return, then they return. I mean, that's the way I kind of look at it. I agree with her, and I think that's what we should do. I think the resumes make sense, and we can get an idea, and then we'll decide.
Legislator Cahill?
Yes.
Could I make a comment from the executive's perspective?
Sure.
I think our concern has been not so much with the flexibility of the IDA, but simply with the effectiveness over the recent period. the number of businesses served, the number of businesses that have approached them and not been able to get assistance. And so I would just ask, as you're looking at this, that one criterion you might think about is what existing members' diagnosis is of why the efficiency and effectiveness was poorer recently and what they would do to fix it. That's our big concern. We need all the tools in the toolbox functioning right now.
Might I speak for a second, Mr. Chairman?
Identify yourself for everyone, because I know you weren't here.
Mr. Chairman, this is Randall Everett. I am the chairman of the IDA.
Okay, thank you.
If you'll permit me to speak to the efficacy or the effectiveness of the agency over the past couple of months, I think we've done quite well. We've had four projects come before us. The agency is designed to review applicants as they come in. It is not the agency's responsibility to search or look for participants for inducement, because at the end of the day, we are in fact looking at providing tax incentives that need to be hosted in other municipalities. So it should not and probably isn't designed to be used as a tool where it is the answer for every single problem. Each applicant that comes in to us goes through a rigorous process of review, and not everyone meets the standard in order to be graduated to inducement. So the notion that we should be churning out applicants who come through the agency isn't necessarily correct. And I would venture to guess that when you look at, if we began to churn out applicants that weren't necessarily eligible, we would have a very, very hard time in passing muster. And it would be actually an embarrassment to the county and the legislature and your constituents when the New York State Comptroller or the Office of ABO started reviewing and auditing the materials, and it looks as if we're just giving things away, because every business that comes in that needs help, the IDA is supposed to be granting them the assistance that they seek. It is a rigorous process that we've established, one that is more rigorous than existed in the past. I'm proud of what the agency has done, considering the transition that it is trying to go through. We are, in effect, trying to make things better so that they operate a bit more efficiently. And, you know, it is a tool in the economic development toolbox, but as I've always said, you know, a trowel and a backhoe, both are used for digging, but both tools are not appropriate at the same time or all the time for the same types of things. So that's my comment there.
Thank you very much. Any more comments tonight?
None. I'll make a motion for adjournment.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you, everyone. Have a good night.
Yep, have a good night.